This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to your window into the meaningful impact being made across the Catholic Diocese of Hamilton. I'm your host, Marion Green, and I invite you to join me as I talk with inspiring guests and explore how the Catholic Development Fund creates ripple results. Today I'm joined by the lovely Diane Porter. Diane is the primary schools advisor in the schools education team at the Chanel Centre. While we could discuss Diane's role as a religious education advisor to the Catholic primary schools in the Hamilton Diocese, which would be very interesting in itself, today we're going to chat to her about her very recent pilgrimage to Europe under the leadership of Bishop Steve Lowe. So Diane, I, for one, perhaps like some of our listeners, have never been on a pilgrimage, and I understand that this is your second, your lucky thing.
Yes, to Europe, or overseas I have. There's been smaller ones, but this one was to celebrate the year, the Jubilee Year of Hope, the Way of Hope.
So, well, I'm really excited to explore your experiences on the pilgrimage, your highlights, challenges, and everything in between. To begin with, can you paint a picture for us of what planted the seed for this pilgrimage? What was the why for you personally?
So back in October 24, I received a promotional email from Harvest Journeys Catholic Pilgrimages. That's an Australian-based journey pilgrimage advertising group. Yeah. Anyway, they were advertising several Jubilee Year of Hope pilgrimages to the Holy Doors in Rome. And my previous experience with Harvest Journey was also with Bishop Steve to the Holy Land in the footsteps of Christ. After that, like, the scriptures just came alive. And this recent pilgrimage was in the footsteps of those who had travelled from Lyon, from the other side of the world. They were our ancestors of faith, and what compelled them to travel to the other side of the world, to New Zealand, and spread the faith. So we walked in the footsteps of Bishop Pompelier Baptiste, Mother Suzanne Aubert, St. Peter Chanel, and along the way of this pilgrimage we met other significant saints and explored the places where they lived and grew up. Like, I'd been there 10 years ago when I was travelling to be with family in the UK, and I went to some of these places that were mentioned on the flyer, and I thought, well, I was a tourist then. I wanted to experience that as a pilgrim. So small bag, basics of clothes, little spending money, and signed up. Yeah,
so quite different to being a tourist, not so much the shopping and the bars and restaurants, I imagine. What about travelling with Bishop Steve? That adds a sort of unique dimension. What was the spiritual atmosphere or intention he helped set for the group before you set off?
Oh, look, the blurb on the advertising brochure was enough for me to know that this was going to be an extra special hikoi. Like I said, I've been travelled with Bishop Steve Lowe before. What he brings is he just opens it up on a personal experience. And so the build-up was really based on that personal excitement, making connections with other pilgrims, promoting more to join and setting goals to fund it. So closer to the hikoi, Bishop invited us to go up to the diocesan office in Auckland, to the Pompelier Centre. He unpacked our journey in such a way that it actually motivated the excitement even more. So as a Catholic educator, I was really invited to, really fascinated in the fact that we were going to meet the people we learned and about and we teach about, the saints. So for many, it was like, for many of us, it was like a family reunion with others who had travelled to the Holy Land, and it was so wonderful to rekindle those relationships again. And there were others who had been travelling with Bishop Steve on another occasion, so they joined up. It was like a big family reunion. And then, of course, we had the new ones who had never experienced a pilgrimage before, and they quickly became Vanu.
Yeah. So you met up with people you travelled with before?
Yes. Yeah.
Wonderful.
It was like, as soon as we saw what the program entailed, and knowing that we had travelled with Bishop Steve before, it was a no-brainer, really. It was, Jubilee year as well.
Yes, how lucky you are. Now, I looked at the itinerary too before you went, and when you were away, I followed your journey a bit. You went to the most amazing places, Lyon to Rome, through the heart of Christian history. Were you drawn to one city in particular, or was it the collective journey itself that called to you?
Oh, look, it was the whole package. I loved Lyon and Turin. And Poada, you know, with St. Anthony, Ars and Couette, where we met Marcel Champagne, St. Peter Chanel, John Vianney. Oh, look, honestly, it all just came alive.
Mm. And as you said, when you're back here in New Zealand and you're teaching children about these things, they're a little bit abstract and they seem so long ago, which they were, to be fair, but actually seeing where they've been, and they would make it feel so much more real, I imagine.
It was quite overwhelming, you know, to see where their humble beginnings came. Many of them came from very wealthy families, and they decided, like, nah, this is what I want to do. I want to come on to the other side of the world to spread their faith.
Yeah, to quite a primitive setup here, really, wasn't it?
But you realise how young we are. We're only like premature babies more than in the history of faith. It was so overwhelming to see that with, you know, and experience that and have it unpacked with not only Bishop, with our guides that travelled with us. The locals that we met and their history, you know, their connection. So I'd do it all over again.
Highly recommend it. So let's talk about the journey itself. With so many iconic stops in there, is there one sensory moment that is permanently etched in your memory? A smell, a sight, a sound? Or the silence in a chapel, perhaps?
Yeah, there was. I guess the opportunity to celebrate Mass in the most exquisite locations, from the tiny little wee parish chapels to the, you know, the opulence of the basilicas. It was quite a surreal feeling. There were so many emotional moments that we experienced, not just myself, but there was others who, you know, each one had its own wairua, its own spirit. The one that, there's one of them that we went to where there were locals that bishops Steve knew, and it was like this beautiful reunion, and then it just, oh, you just wanted to sit in silence and soak it all up and ponder of that journey of that particular, say for example, St. Peter Chanel. Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah. And quite, I imagine it would stir emotion.
Yes, it did, yeah. Honestly, I can't remember the basilica that we prayed in. It was about children, and we had prayed many, many times for family, friends, relations, whoever asked for prayers. And there was just this one moment where someone shared, and it was an over sense of just comfort and aroha amongst the group who, you know, it wasn't only that person's prayer, it became our prayer. It became our, as a collective, you know.
As a whānau.
Yeah.
Mm. Wonderful. And now pilgrims often compare the challenges with the beautiful. So can you share a story of a difficult moment, maybe a long travel day, a crowded sight that ultimately became a meaningful part of your experience?
Oh gosh, there's so many. But so because of the Waiata Mō Marie, and that was Bishop Pompalier's, he composed that, and so that became our theme song. So wherever we went, we sang that several times. On some days there were tears, the crowds stopped, listened, and some made comments of appreciation, including our guides. There was a place where we weren't, there was no talking, you could actually hear a pin drop, but there was this compelling feeling that you wanted to sing, and the guide said no, and Bishop said, sing Mō Marie, let's sing. And we started off singing, and like there was just an incredible feeling. There was tears coming down from the guides. There was tears coming down from the volunteers that were there. And you knew that they experienced something. It was, you know, that song, that waiata. And then it was explained to them what it was about. And they were overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed that we had come all this way to be where we were, and on the other side of the, you know, the world, you know, it just made their connections even more meaningful for them. So the guide said, or our guide said, she's never experienced anything like that in her 35 years of being a tour guide.
Wow, really special and impactful on them as well.
There were other moments, like I struggle personally with the relics displayed, or, you know, and ornately decorated, beautiful, but I struggled seeing the corpus of Carlo Acutis. I viewed him as my grandson, you know, because he's just our newly, canonized saint.
Yeah, just a baby.
I cried, you know, just thinking, wow. But yeah, again, it brought home how rich our Catholic faith is all around, and the history of it all and where it all began. And
because I think for me, when I've travelled to that part of the world, as a Catholic in New Zealand, you know, New Zealand isn't a particularly, inverted commas, a religious country, whereas the faith feels so much stronger.
There's beautiful spirit and the prayers and people. It was natural for them to be carrying their rosaries in public. It was natural for them to show and demonstrate their faith out in public, whereas, you know, you're a bit reserved here, you know, a bit frowned upon, I suppose,
bit to do with the Kiwi psyche too, have been understated you know, not so much showmanship, people might think that's what that would represent. But yes, they're very proud and loud Catholics, aren't they?
Absolutely. And you're in, you know, you're immersed in that atmosphere and you just feel it. So, you know, I was emotional wreck most days, you know, because particularly with the Shroud of Turin, even though we didn't see the shroud, you see where it's laid, where it's displayed, the people who care for it, seeing Pope Francis's resting place. Oh my gosh, I was a crybaby. And going through that third final holy door, and I wanted to sing Whakaria Mai, and Bishop comforted me and others, and we sang More Maria as loud as we could, you know, and it just made everything feel right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you which of those many holy places felt the most powerful, but obviously I'm taking from what you're saying that all of them.
All of them. Me, unexpectedly, it was those tiny little villages in Dardley and Ayres and Kuwait and Puada. To me, the Wairua was strongest in those little places, the simplicity and the history and thinking about what they did way back then and hearing the story of Suzanne Aubert and John Vianney, the hermitage of Marseille and Champagne. Oh, my gosh.
And sometimes you just touch something and you think, they touched this.
Or you walked there, you know. Or you see where they lived in their little bed and their little, you know, their little cottage.
Yeah, it's hard to comprehend, isn't it?
Stunning.
Yeah, especially when people from New Zealand go for the first time. Mm. I have experienced that with family, with my daughters and my husband, and they look at things and they think, this is thousands of years old.
Centuries, you know, it's just incredible.
Yeah, it certainly is. This is the Ripper Results, your inside look at the Hamilton Catholic Development Fund and how it turns investment into impact. I'm joined today by Diane Porter, who has very graciously agreed to share with us her experiences on her recent pilgrimage to Europe. So, Diane, a pilgrimage is an external journey that fuels an internal one. How did the rhythm of constant movement, you know, arrive, pray, reflect, move on, how did that affect your inner state?
I'm physically challenged. It was very fast-paced, lots of walking, breathless many times. you just keep going and with the support of the other pilgrims. Travelling in a big group like ours, there was 50 in total, that included our tour guide and the bus driver. And so there were several challenges, I guess, the time mainly, toilet stops, food, on and off, you know, buses, lost pilgrims, ones who wanted to do their own thing, and you couldn't help but spot them in a little gift shop, and you were always aware of your surroundings. But the main thing was in my head was, I'm a pilgrim. I'm not a tourist, I'm a pilgrim. So you just, if any challenges, you actually had to think about, I'm a pilgrim, and you just give it up. You give up that pain, you give up that stress or you give up those things and concentrate on really what you're there for. And like I said, being as a tourist, but as a pilgrim, it's totally different. You center yourself into the reason why you're there.
Mm. Yes. And I guess you would do a lot of reflecting at the end because, you know, you've been to one place, you're impacted by it, you don't have a lot of time to really reflect on that, and you're on to the next amazing place. And so I imagine when you come home is when it all sort of settles on you. And
I bought a little diary and I bought a little wee watering colour kit, and I was going to, you know, I thought myself, I'll just do some little watercoloring paints and stuff like that. Didn't even open it.
No.
You're just surrounded and just taking it all in. And
you don't want to miss anything either.
No, no.
Mm. So how did travelling as part of a group and with a spiritual leader like Bishop Steve shape your experience compared to if you'd done it alone?
So he brought his humility. As soon as we got on the bus, it's not Bishop Steve. I am Steve. I'm a pilgrim just like you. He brought his love of that special part of the world and his love of our faith too. He opened doors and physically opened doors, and he welcomed the strangers to our liturgies who happened to be in the back of the basilica or chapel, wherever we were. He didn't say, look, this is ours. He invited them to come to the table, and he led by example. Our tour guides at various locations all commented on that, you know, that the group was full of love and full of joy, deep spirituality. Very special masses, like I said. His homilies were superb.
So just to clarify, Bishop Steve actually said mass
every day. Every day.
Wonderful.
In the most amazing places, whether we're underground of St. Peter's Basilica, or where we were in Dardali in the little wee chapel, or every day we celebrated mass. And of course the singing and the acoustics and the harmonising, oh my goodness, it was fabulous. And as a collective group, we all used our talents, and also Steve also invited readings, readers, prayers, you know, he brought everyone in. It wasn't just him celebrating it. We were all involved. I think that, we obtained access to several places that were definitely off limits to the average tourist. Again, our guides were very, very grateful and commented on how, oh my goodness, you know, this is amazing.
Because they got to do it too.
Yeah, they did. And of course, having a bishop with you, like I said, it opened doors to places that we didn't expect to be. And some of the itinerary had to be adjusted to accommodate that, you know, or we had a deadline we had to have be at such and such a place by 12:30. If we didn't, we would have missed out. So everyone was on the understanding. If one of us misses out, the whole group misses out. So it was a real collective effort to make sure that we held that. So, yeah, it was great.
So there were bonuses in many ways of being with Bishop Steve.
Unexpected.
But he had friends in high places, obviously.
or people would, you know, and he obviously has got connections there, but there was those unexpected things. You know, you're a bishop, you know, because he dressed like us, you know, and it was so. And then when they found out that he was Bishop Steve from Auckland, New Zealand, come with me. No, we're going to be here, you know. So you had to be also adaptable to change the space or change the time, or, you know, that's part of being in the pilgrimage as well. You just got to adapt.
I don't know about you, but I found when I've travelled there that New Zealand is very highly regarded. People know New Zealand. They think of it as a bit of a paradise. And the, they always say All Blacks, and
oh yes,
you've always got the connection there.
Even our taxi driver, like in Assisi, and honestly, the hills are like steep, and oh my goodness. So there was a time when I had to revert being a tourist and have a taxi, otherwise I wouldn't have lasted. And where are you from? From New Zealand. All the All Blacks, you know. And honestly, I got a taxi drive right around Assisi, and he didn't even charge me a cent, and it was like, really? And, you know, he was just wonderful. He was so proud to show me his city, his things. Oh, you got to go there. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and there's so much to see, isn't there? So much to do. Now, I've often heard, as I haven't been on a pilgrimage myself, but that they pilgrims often carry intentions or prayers with them. Did the purpose of your pilgrimage shift or evolve from when you initially what you initially thought it would be?
Most definitely. You know, prior to our hikoi, we shared with our friends and family, parishioners, our intentions to travel. And I travelled from my parish. I travelled with the principal of the school. I encouraged her to join up, join the group, and there was no hesitation. So we took our prayers, their prayers with us. The prayers were offered for those who had asked us. And on some occasions, though, I thought of, when we were at places, I thought of so-and-so would have loved this, or if I only could, if so-and-so could just see this and or experience that. Yeah, constantly promoting. So we carried not just them, but our whānau with us.
Wonderful. Now, I know being part of a group has a lot of different emotions, positive and, you know, challenging. So I'd like to talk to you about the community that formed among the pilgrims in your group and what you might have learned from your fellow travellers.
Ooh, lots of personalities. You know, 48 pilgrims came from all over New Zealand, and some we knew, like I said, and new friends were quickly established. There will always be one or two that will take their time to adjust, but generally this group was full of laughter, prayer, and mutual friendships. Like, my roommate was exceptional, exhausting at times because she was so jovial, but so generous with time and care. And we gained an extra roommate while in the Sissy due to our room being way bigger, you know, than others, and rather than being squashed. So you had to, not all the accommodation was the same, so we adapted, but we had a big room in a Sissy and it overlooked the town. And that was fun. So that was a really, really unique. And of course, we had someone who could play the guitar, and we were lucky that, you know, so they found a guitar for us, for him to play. And, you know, again, there's just that soothing guitar playing. Everyone, like, there were deacons and their wives and their ex-teachers, retired principals. It was just a beautiful group, fun group, and you're always going to get one that's, like, even me, I was a bit of a challenge, gosh, physically.
Well, and the
I
heat
needed
too.
Shoulders. It wasn't so, you know, like, it wasn't so heat, it was the steepness. It was almost like walking up Baldwin Street in Dunedin, you know, in some places, and you think you've got to go down and you've got to get up, and you think, goodness, I can't do this alone. And that's where the group really did look after each other.
Oh, that's so nice. So there was quite a few deep bonds
made between you.
And the real challenge, as I touched on earlier, of a pilgrimage often begins when you return home. What was the transition back to, inverted commas, normal life like for you?
Where was that buffet for breakfast, you know? Where was that? Oh my goodness, yes, struggling with returning, you know, overcoming the jet lag, knowing that you're going to get part back into the, you know, your everyday life. But in all honesty, though, it's the sharing of that journey with others, because it was a personal experience. And mine definitely was different to the others. And yet we were all there on the same hikoi, you know, this. You know, the saying that goes, what's on tour stays on tour. But nah, it's not. You got to celebrate that. You got to celebrate the significance of the way of hope. And there's always hope.
What about if someone came to you and said, I'm thinking about doing a pilgrimage? What would one piece of advice you would give them be, based entirely on your recent experience?
Seek a reputable pilgrimage tour organisation, like we went with Harvest Journey. I've been with them before. I know what everything's taken care of. I would definitely say do your research. Do your research and prepare mentally, physically, emotionally. I didn't expect the emotions that would come out.
Can you really prepare for that? Or just,
no, and I guess that's part of the pilgrim. You experience and then it comes right deep to the heart. Nothing will prepare you that. The spiritual part came naturally when you're with like-minded people, and of course, then led with an amazing leader.
And you obviously felt quite safe.
Yeah, yeah. And so there was no need, there's no need to pack a big bag. And like I said about, you've got to consider the surroundings where you're going to be, like the cobblestone streets and steep streets. But I would definitely encourage anyone to consider a pilgrimage tour where you know that it's going to be well organised, the experiences of places that you'd never even think about entering, and including Stevie didn't expect to be able to go to some of the places that we were able to access. So do the research. Don't worry about the money. You just got to do it. You know, you only live once, and God's given us this gift of life. You got to do it.
Yeah, and you would fully recommend Bishop Steve as a leader, because I understand he quite likes doing these pilgrimages, so he probably will offer another one in a few years,
look,
maybe.
I hope so. Really, really, I do. So I'm growing more and more aware of how young our church is in New Zealand. It's so, we're so young, and the influence are coming out of the parts of the world, and it's like New Zealand is so far away from it all. We don't see, that beauty of openness of faith. I have a now deeper understanding of our saints and martyrs and the religious orders that came, left everything behind to come and spread that love of God. So I always look forward to another opportunity, if possible.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Now you can actually pass this on. And when you're talking to people, be it the children or the directors of religious study at the various schools, you'll be able to share that you were there and you did it.
Yes. See, we've got Whanganui, we've got Heru Hanuma with Susan Abir, we've got Motiti and Point and Point with Pompelier. We've got these places here in New Zealand. Do a hikoi or do a pilgrimage in our country.
That would be a good start, wouldn't it? Starting point.
Yep.
Oh, Diane, I could talk to you for hours about this, because it's something that's really, really interesting to me. Thank you so much for joining me today and for giving listeners the amazing experience, insight to your pilgrimage. Making a pilgrimage to a holy place is not something everyone gets to do, but I'm sure hearing about your experiences will inspire lots of others to consider this if they are able to. I really appreciate you sharing with us today, Diane. Go well.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Ripple Results. Catch us next time when I will be talking with another inspirational guest about their role and aspirations made possible by the Catholic Development Fund. You can find us wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts, and if you wish to contact us, you can go to www.cdfhamilton.org.nz or give us a call on 07 85 66 989.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.